Psalms 136, 1 through 9. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever. Oh, give thanks to the God of gods, for his mercy endures forever. Oh, give thanks to the Lord of lords, for his mercy endures forever. To him who alone does great wonders, for his mercy endures forever. To him who by wisdom made the heavens, for his mercy endures forever. To him who laid out the earth above the waters, for his mercy endures forever. To him who made great lights, for his mercy endures forever. The sun to rule by day, for his mercy endures forever. The moon and stars to rule by night, for his mercy endures forever.
Morning. And we are so very glad to have so many of you here this morning on, again, I will contend optimistically, will be our last Sunday in this auditorium. Entirely possible I'll be wrong about that. Will not be the first or last time I'm wrong about something. You know, you get a choice in life. You can be pessimistic and be right a lot, or you can be optimistic and be wrong a lot, and you take your pick. And I'm satisfied with being wrong a lot and hoping for the best. So we are very hopeful that this coming week all the inspections will pass, and our electricians did a wonderful job, I'm sure, of getting everything put together they had to fix this week. As a side note, we're putting together a small envelope of cash for the inspector. If you want to slip us some, let us know. We'll get it done. But no, we're very optimistic that it's going to go well. If it doesn't, we anticipate that you are grown-ups who understand patience at least as well as your children, and that if we need to send out an email late in the week and say, sorry, one more in this auditorium, then we'll make do, and no one will have a conniption or leave. But otherwise, we plan on good things ahead and a lot of excitement. We're also putting the finishing touches today on the plans for our open house, which will be in October. And I think after today, at least by this coming Sunday, we'll be able to announce a date for that and get all that information out. We're just trying to get everything set, all the ducks in a row, the best we can. More on that as it develops. In the meantime, I thought it would be appropriate this Sunday morning, hoping that this will be our last service in this auditorium, take a look back at our story as a congregation and all the many things we have to be thankful for. Sonny just read for us a section from Psalm 136, and while we won't be looking at it in considerable detail, it is the story that kind of guided my thinking in writing this particular sermon the way that I did. If you read Psalm 136, it's one of the more peculiar psalms in its structure. It's very obviously written to be sung as a group, and someone, it seems, is probably doing the singing, the lead, guiding the song, and then others are responding to it, because after every statement, you get this statement that follows, for his steadfast love, or your translation might say mercy, endures forever. And what happens in the psalm, the first nine verses are kind of the big picture stuff. It's the story of creation. The story of what God has done to make this reality possible. But then after verse 9, it starts specifically retelling the story of Israel. And there are lots of psalms that do this. You read the psalms, they're constantly doing it. In fact, if you just turn back one, Psalm 135 is a psalm that retells the story of Israel and why they should be thankful for it. But what makes 136 so peculiar and different and remarkable is that after every single phrase telling the story of Israel, they punctuate it with this statement that's repeated over and over and over again, for his steadfast love endures forever. As if to say by singing this song that every single item in the history of Israel is only possible because of God. It is a recognition of absolute dependence and constant praise, that everything that has got us here to this point when we sing this song is something we are thankful to God for making possible. It is only because his steadfast love endures forever. I think that's a very appropriate sentiment for any group of people to have, especially any group of people who say they're God's people. For Israel, it makes total sense, right? For them to say, this is our story, this is our past, but our story is His story. Our story of our lives is the story of what God has been doing for us and with us all through the generations of our past. And they want their children to learn their story. Wouldn't that be remarkable, by the way? You may not know this. Up to the Enlightenment, really until the 18th century, when people wrote history books, they wrote them religiously. And what I mean by that is, if you pick up a medieval history book, it talks about how God did this for England and God did this for France. And that's the way people thought of history, that whatever had happened, happened at the hand of God. In the 1800s, they decided, well, we probably ought to break up that routine a little bit. We'll boot God upstairs and we'll keep the history down here. And we started telling history scientifically as a series of events that could be observed. And, well, I didn't see God do that, so we won't mention it. And he kind of slowly got left out. But wouldn't that be a remarkable textbook? If your kids went to school and picked up the American history textbook, and after every section it said, "For the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases, for his steadfast love endures." Wouldn't that be a remarkable way of telling that story? It would be a very different spin on it for sure. Certainly as a congregation, I want to suggest to you this morning as we kind of roll through this, that that's the way we should view our past. And it's meaningful. It provokes thanksgiving and praise for us to look back at where we've been and, like this psalm, to punctuate every scene, even the difficult ones, with the proclamation that his steadfast love endures forever. So this morning I would like to take some time and tell a little bit of the story of Glenpool, and to pause and give thanks to God for each piece of it. For some of you, you know it because you lived it. There's a small group here that we might call the charter members. They are the ones who have been here all along, from the very first service until now. Some of you, like myself, are kind of new to the party. We didn't get here till recently, and we don't know the story, and we have to learn it. So it's valuable, I think, this morning for all of us to go back and consider it as we change from one place to another, as a little transition takes place, to think about where we have been and how where we have come, and to acknowledge the person who has made every step of it possible all along the way. We begin in April chapter 2. See, I'm already a preacher. I can't do anything else. April chapter 2. Turn over there. April the 2nd of 1982 at 2 p.m. God blessed the first meeting in the Glenpool Community Center. This is also, Lord willing, the last time I have to put really nice pictures on a really lousy projection system. Maybe next week you'll be able to see whatever I put up. But anyway, if you can see that, that's actually a picture of the congregation meeting over in the community center here in Glenpool. I'm not for sure. I think that was actually taken on April 2nd, but I don't know. It was there in that first year in 1982. None of you want to know this, but this congregation is the same age I am. I was born in 82. And that, you know, never ends to bother people. But, yeah, that's kind of a funny thing to me that it's a story as old as I am. Anyway, as we look at this and think about the very humble beginnings of that particular group getting their start and all the effort that went into it, if you've never had a chance to look at it, our church historian in residence, Rosalie O'Neill, put together this very nice book a few years back chronicling the story of Glenpool's growth. Recently, in fact, just this week, Karen Brown was kind enough to take one apart and scan it and put it online. So it's actually on our webpage if you'd like to go through and read it. But here's kind of her remarks about the beginning of the congregation and how it got started. The Glenpool Church of Christ held its first service at 2 p.m. on April 2nd, 1982, in the Glenpool Community Center, located at 94 West 145th Street in Glenpool, Oklahoma. A group of Christians from the 49th and Tacoma congregation in Tulsa met with the minister and his wife, Don and Frances Pimpin, and the John Davis family, John, Glenda, Michael, age 5, Amy, age 3, Ryan, age 5 months. Don had graduated in February from the Sunset School of Preaching in Lubbock, Texas. And although Don and Frances had been living and working in Muskogee, the Tulsa area was home, and they desired to work in a congregation in or near the Tulsa area. They were being supported by the Westside Church in Muskogee and the 49th and Tacoma Church. As time went on, other area churches gave support to the young church. The Pippins and elders from 49th and Tacoma began a search to locate a place where they thought a new congregation was needed. They explored areas in Peru and Glenpool, and on March 28, 1982, they made the final decision, and the Glenpool Church of Christ was planted. Because afternoon services were difficult for the young children, the church began assembling about a month later on Sunday mornings at the home of the Pippins on Birch Street. And if you want good stories about that, Debbie Whitchurch is the one to talk to. She has these great stories about doing Bible class in the minister's bedroom and setting the kids up on the bed and going through all the songs, because that's how they made it work. And she's one of those that's, I think, been teaching ever since. So she knows the story pretty well. But it was a remarkable amount of effort. It was forethought. It was risk, right? Someone decided there's nothing there. Let's try something. There was foresight on the part of some area elders who said we could support something. We could make it work. And somebody looked down the road at a very sleepy, quiet community and said, this congregation could do a lot of good there and should be there. We look at this opportunity that was made possible in Glenpool and the congregation and how all of us are here now. I don't know if anyone in 1982 imagined the more recent expansion and growth of the community of Glenpool, but we're glad that the congregation is here. And we recognize that it's not here because of Don Pippin, although he was an enormous part of it. It's not here because of the people that were there that first Sunday morning. The congregation is here because the steadfast love of the Lord endures forever, and we believe that with all of our heart. The congregation was blessed a few years later in 1987 on October 30th with a new location, and we ended up in this lot that we're on currently. And again, if you look at the pictures, there's two different stories. This is why you've got to go back and ask. There's two different stories. The story the picture tells is a story of a very unimpressive facility. When you look at the picture, you think, what were they thinking? But then you talk to the people that were there, and they say, we were so excited to move out of the house in the community center and into that double wide and to put it there on that lot and to get to worship in a location that we thought could grow and hold us for years to come. Again, there was forethought. They said, if we had a location, maybe we could do more than we could in someone's home. Locations and buildings are kind of necessary evils. We'd all love to be spending the Lord's money on grander and nobler things, but the opportunities they afford the church to have a location is really hard to pass up, and it's appreciable how exciting they really were. Great picture of Bruce there with a shovel. He hasn't done any work since that day, actually, putting the shovel on the ground in 1987. But what a wonderful story of the opportunity to be able to be here in this location, which really, as Glenpool continues to grow, I'm convinced is an ideal location, and I'm so glad. I couldn't have picked it better if I'd been there. If I'd have been there, I'd have been five, but I couldn't have done any better. And so glad that the congregation is here and the resources it had available in very humble beginnings in a trailer to begin to meet in a location and to be blessed by it. We believe that this thing took place because his steadfast love endures forever. I found a quote in some of the texts that Rosalie compiled. I just let her write my whole sermon this morning. I didn't do any work at all. But this is a line written in the bulletin that year when they made the move in 1987 from Don Pippin, who was minister at the time. Looking ahead, I believe we will continue to grow in our faith and love as God's people. I believe each of us will learn better how to serve God together so that we can cause his kingdom to grow. I believe there are a lot of people that are lost today that will be saved in the future because of the church being here. And what again, forward-thinking thought, someone looking not just at immediate needs, but down the roads, knowing there will be people here who need the gospel of Christ, and a congregation in this location would adequately meet those needs. It was an optimism that we share today as we look at the continued story of growth in this congregation, and we share the enthusiasm and the prayerful hope that his steadfast love endures forever, and we'll continue to see this growth take place. As the story of the congregation continued in the years between 92 and 2008, there were a number of sequences. And if you look at the building, when you walk around, you kind of can see, there used to be a wall there, and there used to be a wall there, and there wasn't anything there. And each part of it was addressed as a need. Constant optimism about the continued life of growth, of where the congregation was heading, looking ahead and saying, we have a need. And charitable, generous, loving people made those efforts possible one piece at a time. And every piece was more exciting than the last. Again, when you look at it, you take for granted that those classrooms are over there. But when they added the classrooms, everyone was so excited. And you look at that optimism and we hope that we can continue to capture that for us today, for his steadfast love endures forever. Something dear to my heart that kind of spans several of those years are the capable ministers and leaders that have served the congregation throughout its history. Certainly elders and deacons as well. There's a number of you here who have served in the past or present as elders or deacons, and the congregation has been blessed immensely with your leadership and your work and diligence throughout this congregation's history. In difficult times and in good, it's the leadership of the congregation that makes these things possible under God's service, and we appreciate every last one of you. The people that stand out to me because of my job are the three men who have served as ministers. I won't lie that when I looked at the congregation and considered coming here myself, one of the standout drawing points was the list of men you had serving here in the past and how long they had served. Not 3 years and out. That's always an exciting trademark for a congregation. You want a place that doesn't fall in love with firing preachers. So it was nice to look and see that you had some quality men and that they had made a life here. I've met Don Pippin. I don't know him personally or very well. Most of you probably know him better than I do. But I am blessed even now by the optimism and enthusiasm he had for this young congregation and the work that he did. Bill Hamrick is better known to me, as you might guess. Bill was the second minister here. He's known my family for a very long time. He spoke at Wetumpka when my dad was minister there, and he and dad go back a long ways. I don't remember him very well, but he remembers me as that Williams kid, so he knows us a little bit. But Bill has been an enormous influence. When I first got here to Glenpool, Bill was a really steady hand when I had questions or needed advice. It was great to be able to go find Bill Hamrick and have a chat. And I don't know if you know Bill very well, but Bill doesn't ever hold still. He's constantly moving. He's always on the way somewhere. He has an office here, but there's no reason for there to be a chair in it because he kind of comes in and comes back out. And so what I would have to do that first year I was here is when I heard the door open and Bill come in, I would stand in my office door and wait. And he would run by with a stack of stuff in his hand. I'd wave him down and say, "Hey, Bill, can you pause a second?" And he had no time for me, but he always made time for me. And he would always take as long as he needed until, you know, usually Lenora would call him on a cell phone. "Aren't you supposed to be back by now?" Sure enough, Ben caught him for 3 hours, and they had a conversation about something biblical or church-oriented that Ben needed to know. And he was a really enormous influence and help to me when I first arrived here. Also very dear to me, the minister that preceded me, Jim Pinkston, has been known to my family for as long as I've been alive. My family worked together with Jim with Frog Road Bible Camp when I was an infant. When I was a child, I went there as a camper. Jim performed the wedding for my brother and sister-in-law, Clint and Teresa. There's a fair number of you that are here and have been baptized because of Jim Pinkston and his influence in this community and to these people, and has been an enormous and remarkable influence on me and my life. If I remember the story right, when Jim stopped conducting the Frog Road Camp as director, leaving me with a task that I thought would only last a year or two. Didn't work out that way. But when Jim stopped doing it, my dad wrote him a letter and personally thanked him for the influence Jim had had on dad's kids for all the good he had done through the years. The night that I was here to try out for the job on a Sunday, that Saturday night, I sat down with Jim and had a conversation with him about the work here. And he was very gracious and kind and has continued to be. Had lunch with him Friday, actually. And he continues to be an enormous influence on me. You look back at the blessings this congregation has had in the way of workers, of elders and deacons, of ministers, and it's just an enormous wealth of resources you've had at your disposal. I think it would be easy to take for granted the caliber of men you've had working here. There are congregations that go their entire history without the quality of men, of which you've had three in succession. And it's a remarkable gift that God has made available to this congregation. And we believe we're here because of it. Good times and bad, and ups and downs, and all that goes with it, we're still here. And God has made that possible through the work of these men. For his steadfast love endures forever. When we consider this congregation and its history, we think about the continued growth. This is that trailer I was talking about, folding chairs and all. We've gone back to chairs, but they're much more comfortable. And you look at the history of this congregation and where it's come from and where it's going. And the passage that comes to mind for me and maybe for some of you, is in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. When the troubled church at Corinth was fighting about everything they could possibly find to fight about, filled with discord, and yet at the same time a growing group of people who had experienced the good blessings of the gospel of Christ. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul writes this to them. What then is Apollos? What is Paul? Servants through whom you believed, as the Lord assigned to each. I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. He who plants and he who waters are one, and each will receive his wages according to his labor. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. When we consider then the history of this congregation, you might ask, is that even an appropriate topic for a Sunday morning service? It's not book, chapter, and verse. It's a story. But the reason it's important to tell our story is to keep the principle of 1 Corinthians chapter 3 firmly planted in our mind. There are wonderful things that have been done here, but the best of all are the things that God has done working with us and above us and beneath us and beside us, constantly attentive to the needs of this congregation and making possible the growth that's brought us this far. Very soon we turn over a new page, and I was thinking back when maybe the last expansion was done or the one before that. Probably every time you expanded, you took a deep breath and said, well, none of that for a while. That ought to hold us forever. I think it was Wendell Winkler who described the four phases of church building. Church buildings go like this in four phases of construction. Number one, we don't need a new building. Number two, we can never afford a new building. Number three, why did we build it so big? Number four, why didn't we build it bigger? Are the four phases of church construction. And we've been through all of those here before. We will continue. And we don't know what lies ahead. But what's important for us as we look at it is that everything we do here needs to be continually remembered and considered as part of God's story working with us. God's story working in Glenpool. This building that we are very near completion on cannot be a monument to human hubris and pride that says, look at what a great thing we can do. We have not built a temple. We have been a house for God's temple. That God has put together a building, a people that belong to Him. And our task in this new facility is to be the kind of people that ought to be there. To be the kind of people that are furthering His work and allowing Him to cause the growth that's possible only through Him. For His steadfast love endures forever. So this morning I'm intentionally brief. I'll remedy that next week. Intentionally brief because I just wanted to pause and give homage to what has gone before, but above all to praise the God who makes this possible. Psalm 136 ends with these precious words. Give thanks to the God of heaven, for His steadfast love endures forever. We have so very much to be grateful for. So very much to be thankful for. If you are not making yourself a part of what God is doing here, you're missing out on so much, a beautiful story, a wealth of blessings, and more to come, I honestly believe. I told you there at the beginning, you can be a pessimist and always be right, or an optimist and generally be wrong. I believe there's still great things to come. I believe the rich blessings we've seen thus far will be continued. And I hope that you are going to be a part of His work in this community. It's a work that begins by faith in Christ Jesus, His Son, and the changing of your life to model His. It begins with a confession that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, who makes all these things we believe in possible. And it begins with baptism into Christ to be added by God to His body as God gives the increase. If you've not done that, this is the wonderful time and place to do it. As we stand and sing together as a congregation, won't you come?